What up, Grizz Nation? We're back with another episode of Free Basketball Grizzlies Edition. I am your host, Daniel Greer, and we are a part of the Lead Sports Media. You can find them at The Lead SM. You can find Free Basketball at Free Basketball 3. And you can find myself over at Daniel Greer. Let's get into a quick episode again. We do have another game coming up Saturday night at home in the Grindhouse. It will be at 8:30. It is a late game, but that's just more time for those Grizzlies fans to get crazy and have a lot of fun on Saturday. I can't wait. I will be there in attendance, but let's go back a little bit. The 141-129 loss to the Utah Jazz. It was a great game. It got away from the Grizzlies early on, and midway through, it just seemed like the game was just going to get out of hand. At halftime, the Grizzlies were down by 20, and it just seemed like it wasn't going to be our night. And then that third quarter, what an amazing third quarter that was. We outscored the Jazz 43-29. It was absolutely a great game. And look at that fourth quarter. It was 32-38, so it wasn't that far off. Those first two quarters, 27 for the Grizzlies, 36 for the Jazz, 27 for the Grizzlies, 38 for the Jazz. In the second quarter on that one, they just outplayed us. They shot so well. They started off the game just throwing up fireballs. The first quarter, they shot 70%. They ended up coming at 48.7% from three-point line and 54% from two. Like, it was just a great game overall. They played well. They went 24 of 31 from the free throw line. Let's go back to the Grizzlies. 29 of 38. Ja Morant was absolutely getting to the line, and he was hitting them. They both shot 76, 77%. They out-rebounded us. And when JV is off the court, we absolutely get torched. And that three-point line, they just obliterated us. 19 of 39. And I think they set a record for the Jazz from the three-point line, making 19 three-pointers. So what I think about with this game is that they played well because they had to. Their backs were against the wall. They could not afford to take another loss and go down 0 of 2 in that series, as well as they were getting back Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell played great, and it was a great game for him. His first game back, 25 points on 19 shots. That's not terrible. He played well. He did only play 26 minutes, so they were trying to keep his minutes limited. Mike Conley, 20 points. He did have 15 assists. Most of those were to Rudy Gobert. Speaking of Rudy, 21 points, 13 rebounds, 4 flops, 18 points for Bogdanovich, 14 points for Royce O'Neal, 8 rebounds as well out of him. And then there are two bench players. Jordan Clarkson, he went 1 of 6 from 3-point line again. Did not just shoot well at all, but he still came home with 16 points and 14 points for the pusher, Joe Ingles. They played well, and they all shot pretty well. Joe Ingles, 3 of 3 from beyond the arc. So it was just a game that the Grizzlies just did not have the shooting. They did not have not foul trouble. I don't know how to explain that. They were always in foul trouble with JV and Dylan Brooks. And speaking of Dylan Brooks, he had 23 points, JV 18 points, and just 6 rebounds. They both played under 30 minutes. It was just a game where they could not get a rhythm. And I know some people will talk about the foul trouble. Early on, they both caught 2 fouls. And some will say, go ahead and take them out because it saves them for possibly the second quarter and allows them to get some run in there before they pick up their third foul. And at 3 fouls, let's go ahead and just stop them at the halfway mark. At halftime, they both had 3 fouls, and so they sat. So they did not get many minutes, and throughout the game, they ended Dylan Brooks 5 fouls, JV 4 fouls. Just to explain something to people, you take them out after a second foul in the first quarter. The reason is you have to somehow keep them in the game. Now, I'm okay with getting them back out there and taking a chance with their third foul, but they cannot afford to pick up their fourth foul because what that does, that hinders them the entire rest of the game. What you're hoping is that you can hold on until halftime, and then they can play free and they can play normal the second half. Just because somebody gets fouls does not mean you need to take them out, but it does make sense to pull them out depending on the player. If it's a big guy, you have to take them out, because what's going to happen? They're going to put them in a pick and roll, such as they do JV every time, and he's also the last line of defense. So as a big man, you have to take him out, and that's what they did with JV. Also, the best defender on our team, Dylan Brooks, he's going to guard their best player. You have to take him out in that situation. The only thing you can do is put him off on somebody else. But we also know Dylan Brooks. He can get fiery, and he has to play with that fire, that passion. And he's foul prone. So why would we not take him out in that situation? Taylor Jenkins was very smart. Yes, it got away from him. But it showed him that, yes, we might not be able to hold on to a lead, and that might get away from us a little bit. But if we allow our guys to play freely and open, then they can play the second half well. And they absolutely did. And they showed that in the third quarter. I'm okay with getting those guys in more in the second quarter and maybe short spurts. If you get them in short spurts, they're more active, they have more energy, and they're less lazy. So that's something I would rather look at, is getting somebody in for a 4 to 5 minute stretch, pulling them out, giving them 2 or 3 minutes, and then 4 or 5 minutes back in. That allows them to stay active. That allows them to stay fresh and allows them possibly not to get so deep into the game where they're getting, you know, into their head and they're making stupid fouls and they're just reaching with their arms. So instead of just somebody just saying, you know what, I would say go ahead and leave them in the game. I don't believe that, because if they pick up their third foul in the first quarter, you cannot afford to have them foul out by the third quarter. That allows the other team's game plan to completely switch, and they're going to go right at you. As long as JV has the potential of being in the game, they know they have to keep playing it close to the vest. They have to. And so I believe that you have to keep some players in the game, such as a John Morant. I would keep him in there with his 2 or 3 fouls. I would take my chances, because more than likely, on the defensive end, he's not going to foul. But somebody who's foul prone, such as Dylan Brooks and a big guy in JV, I think you have to go ahead and get them out. But sorry to kind of go on so long about that. I just felt the need to talk about it, because so many on Twitter were just discussing and digging into Taylor Jenkins and his thought process. The guy is a great coach. He's making some bonehead decisions sometimes, and his challenges aren't always the best. But we also have a chance to see it on TV. He is looking live and in person, and that's a whole different feel. But let's get into it. Ja Morant, what a game out of him. 47 points. He almost got to the 50 mark. He had 7 assists, 4 rebounds, and 43 minutes. He was the reason that we had a chance in that game. No other reason. The rest of the team played okay. Everybody just felt like they just did not have it. They did not have the energy they normally have. Ja Morant is so special. He almost willed us to win, and they cut it within 2 or 3 at some point in the third quarter, before they called the timeout and they came out with like an 8-0 run real quick and got it right up back to 10. So I applaud Ja Morant for putting this team on his back and absolutely saying that I will not go down without a fight. And that's the guy who I would get into a foxhole. That's the guy who I would go to war with. That's somebody who I would throw hands for. And that's why you see this team rally around him. When Ja Morant is playing the way he is, the rest of this team's energy and will and drive absolutely picks up. Now we're going to go into game 3 and into the grindhouse. It will be absolutely electric. And I hope that every fan boos Rudy Gobert every time he touches the ball. So if you're going to the game, let's have some fun. I have a PSA in 1 second, but first, let's just keep talking about this. Let's have fun at this game. Let's treat the players respectively, and let's boo them. Boo Rudy Gobert. On to my PSA. Do not do something stupid. Here in Memphis, we pride ourselves. We're family. We're the 901. We are fans that know basketball. We're also respectable. When someone leaves Memphis, such as Mike Conley, do we cheer him? Absolutely. When Mike Conley comes back and is announced in that starting lineup, will Mike Conley get booed, cheered, or just crickets? Absolutely, Mike Conley, our conductor of our Memphis Grizzlies team, part of the Core Four, will absolutely be cheered for and applauded. And I will be one of the main ones clapping my hands because so many years ago, I saw Mike Conley in a Best Buy looking at CDs. He was a little shorter than I was, very much smaller than I was. I knew who he was. He was a rookie. I talked to him, said hello. Hey, man, love your game. Never would I ever have thought that that guy would become the leader of this Memphis Grizzlies team. He's a man. He's a good man. And he's part of Memphis. And I know that his family is excited to be back here. And I know the Grizzlies fans are excited to welcome him back. And after that ball goes up, there's no more family. We're not going to be fans of Mike Conley. He is the enemy. But we don't boo Mike Conley. And we will not be the fans that will be disrespectful that we saw in New York. Absolutely not. And then in Philadelphia, absolutely not. We aren't those fans. And I pride myself and a lot of other people do in Memphis that we do things right. Yeah, we have a little grit to us, a little grind. And sometimes we're a little crazy. And we're blue collar. But we do not do those kind of things. And so I just wanted to say that because I feel confident that I know Memphis. And I know Memphis fans, my friends, the people that we'll walk down with who might not look like us, might not talk like us, might not have anything in common with. But we have the Grizzlies. And that's what keeps us whole. And so, yes, Memphis has got its bad rap at times. But I promise you, we do not do those kind of things. And that's very disrespectful because these people are humans. They're fans. They're players. They are the game. And without them, there is no game. So I absolutely hate what happened. But I know that Memphis fans aren't like that, and I'm so happy that I am a Memphian. I'm so happy that I'm a Grizzlies fan and that we do things right. And so I hope that the Grindhouse is absolutely rocking, and I want to hear boos to Rudy the Flopper Gobert. And I can't wait until those two games and the Grizzlies come out with wins, and we do it respectfully because that's who we are. But game three, it's going to be a game of adjustments. We saw two games, and both games were very similar in style in some ways, but also different. That first game, they could not really figure out Ja Morant, and even JV was very much a force. Well, in that second game, you saw JV get more, I guess, double team in a sense. They could not figure out Ja Morant still, and they still don't know what to do. And maybe it was just because Ja Morant is so good. Yes, Rudy Gobert did go and meet him at the rim one time, but that doesn't mean that Rudy Gobert is going to, you know, deter Ja from going to the rim, because the second time he came to the lane, Rudy, well, he stepped aside because he knows what Ja Morant's all about, and he goes for the throat, and absolutely Ja Morant was going for the jugular that game. Well, on the other side, the Utah Jazz, they played it very different. They are a team who went pick and roll heavy, and they will continue to go pick and roll heavy from here on out. And if the Grizzlies cannot figure out how to stop the pick and roll with Rudy Gobert, then we're going to have problems. Because what happens is Rudy comes up there, and he does set a moving screen, and he does try to hold the defender a little bit to allow them more time for Mike Conley to get away. And Mike Conley then has an option. Does he take the shot immediately, which he did a lot? Does he drive to the hole, which he has done? Or does he throw it up for a lob for Rudy Gobert? Well, if the Grizzlies don't hedge with JV, then what's going to happen is they're going to have him have those easy looks. And if you do hedge with JV, then who on the backside can help? And that's what it comes down to, is on the backside defenders, whether it's Ja, Kyle, Dylan, whoever's in the game, if you're not able to hedge and be in the paint and potentially give up the wide open three to Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, Bogdanovich, and even Royce O'Neal, then there's no way that we're ever going to last. Like, they will absolutely eat us alive in the paint. We almost have to take our chances when they're on the road on those three-pointers. So what I'm hoping is that we do show a little bit of a hedge to the front of Mike Conley, but hold him down enough with the help of the backside defender to deter them from throwing the lob, to allow our defender to get back in front of Mike Conley, and allows JV to get back to Rudy Gobert. If that is the way they defend this, then we absolutely can win this game, and I hope that they make the adjustments that they have to. This game is the game of adjustments, and I can't wait to see it. Like I said, the Grindhouse will be rocking, and I hope it's an absolute blast, because I know I'll be there, and I'll probably be hoarse the next time you hear me, but man, I can't wait. We'll be back here with another edition Sunday. It will be Sunday, firsthand experience, how the Grindhouse was going, and I can't wait to be on here. Be nice and tell your friends.